Today we finish up our lesson exploring the wisdom that is resident in a word. It's a Greek word. The word showed up in a letter that St. Paul wrote to the spiritual community at the ancient city of Corinth some time ago. The Greek word is merimnao. The English word that we translate that word doesn't capture the full context, the full meaning of it, the word, but the English word is care or caring. So to help everybody catch up, here's an abbreviated version of the paraphrase we've been looking at this lesson. The harmonious world we all long for begins when enough of us take up the challenging posture of caring. There's that word, merimnao. Suffering with those who suffer, sharing honor with those who are honored. It's challenging, but those who care make the harmonious world we all long for. Now, as I've said, the English word doesn't capture the meaning that was in the Greek word. The original Greek word had a root meaning that kind of captures what we say when we say the cares of the world. In other words, the word started thinking about what are my fears and what are my anxieties, what are the pressures that I'm facing. But over time, the meaning morphed and it became a word about things that stress me and stress my life, beginning to be me carrying the same concern about the things that stress you in your life. In other words, it became a word about me carrying your cares and your fears, me carrying the things that stress you and your life. So, earlier in this lesson, we said that the English word empathy captures the merimnao better than the English word care. Because empathy means to share experience with another. It means stepping into a shared space with another person. In fact, it means being the one to create that shared space, meeting someone in their experience, which is what Paul's saying when he uses that word. Merimnao is a bedrock necessity for creating the harmonious world that we all long for. Someone must step in and share pain and trouble with the other. Someone must step in and share honor and pleasure with the other. Seeing what the other sees, feeling what the other feels, someone must initiate that process. Inviting another into the experience of a shared space, sometimes on that person's worst day, so that that person does not feel alone, so that that person feels a shared sense of belonging, belonging to the community, belonging in the human experience, stepping into that space and communicating what you are going through, we all go through. We then talked at length about the demands of the word, the demands of caring, the cost of caring, and to help us frame that cost accurately, we highlighted how merimnao is not really a to-do list kind of word. That's not the cost it exacts of us so much as it's a seeing the world differently kind of word. The word means to change the lens through which we see the world, change the filter that we carry around that determines what we see and what we don't see, what we filter out and what we let in, which means the work that we do when we do merimnao is less time-sucking, energy-sucking, to-do list kind of work and adding that into our lives. And it's more the kind of work of unearthing and then examining our blind spots. It's the work of training to see what we tend to not see. The work of seeing that my instincts have blinded me, and then the work of seeing what my instincts have blinded me to see. So it's still hard work, but it's a different kind of hard work. It's a cross your arms kind of hard work. So if you're a newcomer, you don't know, we use this metaphor all the time. Cross your arms, go ahead and do it. Everybody, cross your arms for the sake of the newcomers, and notice that there's one hand on top, and for me, my left arm is on top. Now, cross your arms so that your right arm is on top. And oh my God, that feels weird. How do I do that? Well, we say that to highlight the way our brains are wired. Our brains are wired to do what we have done. Our brains are wired to think what we have thought. Our brains are wired to see what we have seen. And the spiritual journey is all about doing it differently. The spiritual journey is all about rehabituating our brains so that we see things that we have not seen before. So that's the work of merimnao. It is bringing ourselves to the place of not going with our base instincts that habituate us to go in a certain direction because that's what we've always done. So that's kind of where we've been. And again, merimnao is demanding. It's hard to see what we haven't seen. It's hard to rehabituate ourselves. However, we emphasized, the demand that is required by this word, the hard work, the cost of this word is nothing, nothing, nothing stacked up against the high cost that is exacted of us if we do not change how we see. The demand of this word is nothing compared to the high cost that is exacted of us if we don't see the world through the merimnao lens. Now, to illustrate that high cost, for the last 2 weeks, I've told personal relationship kinds of stories. I told a story about me and Denise. I told a story about a mother and daughter. And the reason I did that is not because merimnao is not the centerpiece of social change. It is. Merimnao is the essential foundation for righting the wrongs of racial injustice. Merimnao is the essential foundation, the motivating drive to invite in anyone who has been left out of access to economic opportunity or access to educational preparation or access to social and emotional bandwidth. Merimnao is the motivating force behind the Christian's call to be healers of the earth. But still, I told stories about what happens in your house and what happens in my house every day. Stories about how the conflicts that kill harmony in our relationships will exact a high, high cost of us if we do not empathy and if we do not merimnao. Because that's where we see it most clearly. When someone in our most intimate circle does not feel heard, when someone in our most intimate circle does not feel seen, when they don't have a shared sense of belonging, that's when things get really clear, really fast, that there is a high cost of not merimnao. The minute we walk into the door to icy coldness or we walk into the door to volatile explosions, yeah, we know merimnao is in short supply. Now, we typically don't call it that. We typically blame the other for their foul mood, or we typically deride them for the unfairness of their actions. We typically proclaim the righteousness of our own cause. But if we're willing to see, if we're willing to grasp the bigger picture, it's easier for us to see at home the steep price that we pay for not taking up the practice of caring, for not taking up the practice of empathy, for not taking up this word. We pay a steep price when we do not create shared space to see what the other sees, to feel what the other feels. So, of course, in our intimate relationship, there must be reciprocity. We not only must hear, but we must be heard. We must not only be see, but we must be seen. We work through that extensively in our conflict resolution module when we do that. But honestly, the being seen part, that's not nearly as difficult to put into place as the seeing part, as the extending space, extending care, extending curiosity part. So I told two close-to-home stories. Because when merimnao is in short supply in your most intimate circles, it's easy to see how steep a price we pay for non-empathy. Well, today, I want to explore the price of not empathy in the circles that move out further from our intimate group. When a group that is not my group does not feel heard, when a group that is not my group does not feel seen or invited to belong, that also exacts a very high cost of us. It creates a daily sapping of our energy and our resources. Now, that's kind of what our oneness framework of spirituality would suggest would happen, because we are all in this human experience together. And so when one group does not feel invited into shared experience, when one group does not feel the invitation to belong, when one group suffers, the whole suffers along with. And when we think otherwise, we are working in the world as the world is not. The reality is that we are in this together. And when we function according to patterns that tell us that we do not live in this world together, we're going cross-grained to reality, and it is always going to end badly. If we look at the news lately, you see it is ending badly. When a young black man gets stopped by the police for the sixth time in a year for nothing more nefarious than driving, not violating an ordinance, just driving, the message that gets sent is, you don't belong. You are not in this with us. We are not in this with you. You are outside of our experience, and we are outside of yours. Nothing shared here. Now, the young black man has to bear the weight of the fear and the rejection and the anger and the unfairness, but he doesn't suffer alone. The whole suffers along with the part. That's what happens when we're part of an integrated oneness. Consequently, the tension that is introduced into the system affects everybody in the system, especially when that young man's stress is multiplied by the many young black men who share his experience, and the whole system gets stressed. When a criminal emerges from incarceration and can't get an interview for a job, let alone a job, and can't qualify for housing, and can't get access to what he or she needs to start rebuilding life, yes, that individual suffers the stress, the rejection, the frustration, and the hopelessness, but so does the whole. The despair that gets introduced into the system affects everybody that is in the system. Now, we can fool ourselves into believing that that's just happening over there to those other people, but that's not the way it works. It affects the whole. Those who are not invited into shared space in our human experience, they don't disappear just because they have been disinvited. They're still here. They're still alive. And their hurt is still present. And so is their economic reality. And so are the emotional consequences of rejection. Those are here too, and they remain affecting the whole system, the system of which every one of us is a part. So when a family member is not extended, merim na'o, when a society member is not extended, merim na'o, it undercuts the harmony we all long for, as our text said. It creates a world that costs us every day, and it costs us dearly. The harmonious world that we long for comes with a cost, and that cost is someone taking up the lens of merim na'o through which we see the world. So when marchers chant, no justice, no peace, it can sound like a threat. If you don't give us justice, we're going to make your life hell until you do. And when people perceive a threat, it's not uncommon to have a threat response, a defensive response. But if you hear that chant as an observation about reality, it's kind of on point. When there is no justice, when one group feels that they have been excluded, that they do not belong, when a person or a group has been out-grouped, the message we send, subtle or overt, is you don't belong here. We send the message that says, this family works for me, but it doesn't work for you. This school works for me, but it doesn't work for you. These streets, they work for us, but they don't work for you. Without merim na'o, there will be no peace. Without merim na'o, there will be no harmonious world. That's what shared experience is about. Without it, everybody suffers. Not just the excluded. Everybody suffers. So again, if we think changing our lens to seeing with merim na'o eyes is difficult, then we haven't factored in the high cost of not doing so. Someone said this to me this week. He said, you know what we're doing at NRCC? We'd had a conversation, kind of came around to this. You know what we're doing at NRCC? We're working on the stuff that's killing us all. We're working on the stuff that's killing us all. And that's kind of been resonating since that conversation in my head, because I think it's a pretty good assessment. When we are working on developing merimnao in our souls, we're laying the essential groundwork for a sustained commitment to creating a harmonious world. When we are working on the things we work on at NRCC, we're working on fragile family bonds. We're working on the torn fabric of community. We're working on racial and sexual and gender inequity. We're working on loneliness. We're working on alienation. We're working on rejection. We're working on the stuff that is killing us all. Isolation happens when the fabric of community is torn. The research is becoming clearer and clearer. There are consequences when the fabric of community is torn. There are physical consequences to our bodies. There are mental consequences. There are emotional consequences. It turns out when the fabric of community is torn, there are higher rates of heart disease and diabetes and cancer. Health outcomes when community breakdown go down further than when we would smoke 15 cigarettes a day. That's what the research that was reported in this Time article says. So in Britain, they're realizing this is a health risk, and they've appointed a minister for loneliness. Restitching the torn fabric of community and the undergirding skills that are necessary to do the restitching and the undergirding spiritual reality, the spiritual journey that makes it possible to sustain that commitment, this is the work that is set before us. This is the work we're doing. We're working on the stuff that is killing us all. Now, if you have kids in your life that you love, there's not much more important than this, because this is the world that we're going to leave them. These are the instincts that we're going to teach them. This is the lens that we're going to pass along to them. The reality that we want for our kids, the reality that we want for ourselves, demands that someone invite the other into shared experience. It demands that someone takes the first step, that someone attends to the other, that someone empathizes with the other, understands the other. Now, there is an undercurrent in our social discourse going on this day, on these days. You might not have noticed it, but it's in the air if you're quiet and you listen. And it is this. There's an unspoken sense that it is important, perhaps even necessary, to highlight our hurt. It is important, perhaps even necessary, to hold on to our grievances and our bitterness. That it is important, perhaps even necessary, to nurse our injuries. And the thing is, there's a lot of significant hurt going on out there. There are a lot of needs that must be highlighted. There are wounds that can't but breed bitterness. But if every injury gets highlighted and every bitterness gets accentuated, then who among us is going to break the cycle? Who among us will become the carer? Who among us will become the invite-in-er? Who will empathize? Who will create the shared space for belonging? Well, Jesus would suggest that it's us. Those who follow Jesus, we are instructed to be the ones. Now, we have inherited a spiritual path that will help us do that, that will lead us to healthy souls. And yes, it is true, as we've noted many times, that we've lost our way on our own spirituality, and sometimes our spirituality has gotten toxic, and sometimes the things that we do in the name of spirituality are actually damaging. But as we've said so many times, it is our way to lose our way, but it is also our way to find our way when we've lost it, and we are finding our way again, and we are finding a spiritual path that heals us. And from that place of healing, we are further instructed to go into the world with healing in our wings. That's the way one of our prophets said it. If we are deeply wounded, we get to rest up. If we are deeply wounded, we get to heal. But when we have It is our call to share our healing with others. To go into the world with healing in our wings, merimnao, is how we get there. There's a lot at stake. The harmonious world we long for. There's a lot at stake. The world that we bequeath to the kids we love. So at NRCC, we're working on this stuff that is killing us all. Last week, George sent me a link to this TED Talk. I should have put the title up so you'd remember it, but it's Susan Pinker. If you just remember that word, that name, Susan Pinker, it's called The Secret to Living Longer. Anyway, she based her talk and her research and several publications she's done on the same research that the Times article was highlighting, that there is an overwhelming body of research now telling us that the torn fabric is killing us. In her talk, she cited these two studies, and if you want to go read the original, it really was interesting stuff, go ahead and snap a photo of those, and you can go Google them, and they'll bring up. You have to read through some statistics, but you can skip that section on the statistics, just get to the research process, and then get down to the results. But here's the bottom line, if you want to just get the gist of it, it's this. Our health and our well-being, our morbidity, how sick we get, and our mortality, how early we die, these things depend on restitching the torn fabric of community. Our morbidity, how sick we get, our mortality, how soon we die, depends on enough of us taking up the practice of merimnao. The degree to which we do not invite the outsider in, the degree to which we do not create a harmonious world, is the degree to which we are killing ourselves, is the degree to which we are making ourselves sick. So she cites some meta-studies, studies of studies, exploring factors that determine morbidity and mortality. How do you avoid a short and sickly life, or how do you have a long and healthy life? Now, several of these factors are already in our conscious awareness. When we see pictures of people in Beijing with masks on, riding their bicycle, and the air is so clear, we think to ourselves, yeah, that's got to be killing them. That's in our conscious awareness. That can't be good for you. But it turns out bad air is way down at the bottom of the list, as is hypertension, as is excessive weight. Now, those things are on our radar. We know those things are bad for us, as we know about smoking and as we know about too much boozing. Now, there is less deterministic in those factors for our health and longevity than those things at the top. Now, we know that close relationships are good, and we probably think social integration matters too. But what hasn't entered into our popular consciousness that the torn fabric is killing us? It turns out not merimnao makes us die early. It turns out that not merimnao makes us sick. Close relationships are important for health and wellness. Now, that's kind of intuitive. If you ever have a money crisis or if you ever have a health crisis, these are the people who are going to stand with you and help you get to the other side of it. If you're ever in a state of despair or going through some kind of a crisis, these are the one who will be by your side, this close, intimate circle of people. So yes, we can see how those relationships could be a strong predictor of life and of health. But even above those relationships, and this was blowing my mind, above smoking, above hypertension, is the circle of people who are one circle out. Not just those who are our intimate closeness, but those one circle out, how predictive they are, our relationship with them is for our health and longevity. The most predictive factor of well-being is our network of friends, the people we go to church with, spiritual friends we call it, the people that we go to work with, the people we do business with each day, the people with whom we buy and sell. Now, in a harmonious world, it turns out, this circle is really important. It's kind of a pool in which we work out merimnao. There's an old expression at home, home is where you go and they have to let you back in. So there's a requirement for that intimate circle. We know we're going to have to accept those people. God, yeah, we accept them. They come in. We don't have to accept this next circle out. And so the work we do there is the work of bringing ourselves to the work of merimnao. It's here that we spot where hurt is being administered, where wounding is being administered, where people are being outgrouped, and we step toward that and bring healing in our wings. That's the circle in which we do that. And it turns out that doing that, stepping into our world with healing in our wings, is a restorative dynamic in our own lives. It releases all kinds of brain chemicals, oxytocin, vasopressin. There's a lot of things, and you can listen to for all the details, you can listen to the TED Talk. But these chemicals that get released when we engage in that kind of activity does more for us than stopping smoking. Now, in our generation, in the times in which we live, there has been kind of an unintentional conspiracy to eliminate the sense of interaction that we have in this one circle out. We've kind of fallen into a reduction of a sense of civic responsibility for that one circle out. Maybe it's because of the electronic communication, maybe it's virtual communication, maybe it's because of the rise of mass media and the alienation that we feel because of scope and scale, all things we've talked about in the past. But there has been a conspiracy to diminish our sense of responsibility in this sphere, which turns out can kill us. Now, that's even more true in the next circle beyond that, the people that we don't know, but who, if we're part of an organized religion, organized for the common good, like the community of communities that is now forming, that we can join in and join our energies besides others and create a just and harmonious world, even beyond the circles of our social integration, we feel even less responsibility to that circle. And the research is telling us, if we don't do merim na'o here, and here, and here, it will kill us. We will die, and we will be sick on our way to the grave. So, I pray that this awakens us. I pray that we don't look at this and say, oh, merim na'o would be so difficult. I pray that we look up and say, not merim na'o is killing us. Not merim na'o here, and here, and here will destroy us. And for goodness sakes, our community is just overflowing with tools to help us do that. Meditation, this is an essential tool. Enneagram, that's game-changingly helpful. The self-awareness, self-disclosure work that we do, that's powerful. Conflict resolution, talking circles, this changes everything, as does our work together on restorative justice. Now, we're working hard on the things that are killing us all. And I do pray that we will together jump in and work hard on the things that are killing us all. So, Spirit within us, may it be so. Amen.